A range of identification would be acceptable this fall, including student IDs. But in later elections, only driver's licenses, state-issued non-driver's ID cards, passports, or military IDs would be allowed. Those who don't have photo identification would sign an affidavit and be photographed by an election official. Supporters say the requirements would minimize the potential for fraud. A spokesman for Governor Lynch says he has concerns about the bill and will review it with the Secretary of State. The governor is joining Laconia officials today to talk about the upcoming 89th Annual Motorcycle Week. He's gathering with them at 11 this morning at Weirs Beach. Hundreds of thousands of riders are expected in the state for the event based in Weirs Beach on Lake Winnipesaukee, featuring races, swap meets, concerts, vendors, a tattoo convention, bike tours, and other fixtures of Bike Week. It all kicks off Saturday and will run through next weekend. This is NHPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org.
And support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and from Meadowbrook U.S. Cellular Pavilion in Guilford, presenting Crosby, Stills, and Nash in concert Wednesday, June 13th. Tickets available online at meadowbrook.net. And Elliott Gastroenterology and Endoscopy, treating individuals with diseases of the stomach, esophagus, and colon at the Elliott at River's Edge in Manchester. ElliottRiversEdge.org. Our forecast calls for some occasional sunshine through midday today, the North Country seeing the most sunshine. This afternoon, more clouds will build in across the state. We'll see a few scattered showers pop up as well. Highs from the mid-60s north of the Whites to near 70 at the seacoast. Tonight, partly cloudy. Overnight lows between 40 and 50. Friday, partly sunny statewide. A chance of a shower or a thunderstorm, especially north of the Lakes region. Highs tomorrow will be between 70 and 80 degrees. Right now, the weekend looks sunny and warm. I'm Rick Ganley. This is New Hampshire Public Radio News at 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. This week, a highly politicized bill titled the Paycheck Fairness Act died in the U.S. Senate. The bill was aimed at the so-called wage gap between men and women. It would have given workers greater legal rights if they found evidence of pay disparities between male and female employees. Republicans voted against the measure, saying it would have encouraged a flood of workplace lawsuits, while Democrats called the bill an important tool aimed at closing the divide between men's and women's paychecks. But the debate over the bill raised an old question. How big is that divide, really? The White House says it's 33 cents. The Bureau of Labor Statistics says it's 24 cents, while the Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis suggests it could be as small as 5 cents. So the answer depends on what data you use, how you use it, what your politics are. And there's another question that's also open to interpretation. If there is a wage gap, what causes it? Is it outright discrimination or differences in education and experience or the career choices women themselves make? Today in The Exchange, gauging the gap. How wide is the divide between the sexes and what might be the reasons behind it? Let's hear from you. Do you see a gender-based wage gap in your workplace? If so, why do you think that's the case? What's it based on? And if not, then why do you think there's still so much attention paid to this issue? Give us a call, The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us a short email. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. Joining us from D.C. is Gail Trotter, General Counsel for the Independent Women's Forum, a research and educational institution dedicated to expanding the conservative coalition. Gail is also co-founder of Schaefer and Trotter, a law firm that advises small businesses. And Gail, thanks for making the time for us today. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
With me in studio, Marianne Jones, Executive Director of the Women's Fund of New Hampshire, a statewide foundation dedicated to encouraging philanthropy among women and girls and educating about the potential of women and girls. And Marianne, good to see you. Thank you for being here as well.
Nice to be here, Laura.
Well, and both of you, Marianne, you first. Why is it so hard to come up with a number on this that everybody can look at and everybody can say, yes, that's a good way to measure the gap? I read three different numbers just in my introduction. I saw another number, 20 cents, just this morning. Why is this so hard, Marianne?
Well, research and data are always a challenge for the average person. I'm a consumer of research and data. And the way I look at it is that when you average these numbers over 40 years of a career, over hundreds and hundreds of career choices and fields, you end up with a very simplistic number that is an average. However, if you look at age cohort and professional category and start to dig deeper into the more detailed research, you start to see that, yes, there is a wage gap. It changes and shifts over the course of a lifetime and over the course of what field you choose to make your living in.
So we can't say, Marianne, the wage gap is X cents. We have to say for doctors, it's this. For lawyers, it's this. For house cleaners, it's this.
I think the basic premise is that there is a wage gap and it does exist. And if you take it averaged across all professions and all decades of age, there is a wage gap. To understand, is it greater in engineering than it is in the service industry, you need to look at those industries specifically. And if you want to understand, is it greater for younger women than it is for older women, you need to look at those age cohorts.
All right. We'll look at that this hour, I'm sure. But to you too, Gail Trotter, again, why do you think it's so hard to get a number that everyone can agree on and say, yes, that's a good measurement of the wage gap?
That's a fascinating issue because it's hard to come up with a comparison of every single job, every single amount of educational attainment that each worker has, if they have to take time off for personal reasons, including child rearing or going back to school, taking care of sick relatives. All of these things play into the comparison of what one person makes versus another person makes. And I think it would be interesting to ask some of the women who are senators pushing for the Paycheck Fairness Act how they have a wage gap in their office and what explains it. Senator Patty Murray is one of the proponents of the Paycheck Fairness Act. She pays the female staffers in her office 35.2% less than her male staffers. Senator Feinstein pays her female staffers 41% less than her male staffers in her office. Senator Boxer pays her female employees 7.3% than her male staffers. And so I think for people who are advocating remedial government intervention to correct this, they need to explain why in their own offices they have this supposed wage gap.
So what do you think, Gail? What's the best way to measure it? Is it earnings over a lifetime? Is it earnings at one snapshot in time? Is it dollars a week? Is it dollars per hour? What's the best way to look at this? Or is there no one best way?
I think even looking at it kind of obscures the fact that women make choices that make a lot of sense to them. So trying to say that money is everything in the decisions that women make doesn't give value to the choices that they're making in terms of family and work and professional attainment. So it really just is an opportunity to make women feel bad and to say that they have to achieve in the same ways that men do. And I think that the question itself is just misleading and does not really go to the heart of the kind of choices that women want to have in the workplace.
So women might give up more dollars, Gail, in exchange for better health benefits for their children, more flexible time. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, and I know that from personal experience. I have six children. My husband and I went to college and law school together, and we worked together as a team for our family and our professional attainment, and we've made different choices and made different balances among ourselves. And to say that money is the only thing that shows professional attainment is a false canard for women. There are many other things that women and men value, and those choices should be available to them.
You know, what do you think, Marianne? This comes up a lot, that the wage gap can be explained, perhaps in small measure, perhaps in large measure, by the different choices that women make.
Well, I think what we've seen in New Hampshire is that when we compare apples to apples, so a full-time working woman and a full-time working man in a career that's going to go on for 40 years, where they're opting out in the same manner and making the same decisions, there is over time an identifiable wage gap. And most of that occurs as a result of lack of promotion, lack of advancement, and often a distinctive wage gap. as the there's been a number of studies done when we compare exact same professions to the exact same professions.
Because that's what we need to do, apples to apples.
It's very, very difficult to compare a woman who does the on and off ramp, which is often referred to when a woman drops out to take care of family.
Or, the mommy track.
Right, the mommy track. But when you compare over a 40-year career, that's apples to apples, women in a specific profession and a man in the exact same profession, that's when you uncover the wage gap.
Now, has that woman gone on the mommy track, though? Because if she takes, you know, a year off or 2 years off, then she's not directly comparable to that guy.
In fact, when a woman has a child, she's given 6 weeks leave, either paid or unpaid. So she's coming right back into the workforce. So it's a myth. There's a stereotype that women are dropping out for years at a time. But statistically, now we're finding out that women are not. Once they're having their children, they're going right back into the workforce, and a lot of that is driven by economic needs.
Well, lots of calls already and lots more to talk about. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Today in the exchange, we're gauging the gender wage gap, if it exists, how big it might be, what might cause it. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Keep those emails short, please. And let's take a call, both of you. This is Mark waiting in Laconia. Hi, Mark. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that I think that the wage gap in this country is going to come together organically simply because my son was recently inducted into the National Junior Honor Society. Out of the 15 students that were inducted, 4 of those students were boys and 11 were young women. So I say to the men and young men of this country, watch out, because the women are coming, and they're coming on strong, and obviously, from that performance, the wage gap is going to come together much sooner than people think.
Yeah, you know, that's something that I have noticed, too, especially around this time of graduation, Mark, where you see all the valedictorians, and more of them do tend to be girls these days. To both of you, Gail, you first, what do you think? In another 10, 15 years, there's no wage gap because women are getting more advanced educations than men?
Well, back to the point, I don't think there really is a wage gap, but even assuming that it is, you are so right to say that women are achieving in remarkable ways now. In 2010, more women obtained PhDs than men. And to compare with what the salary is that they're getting in the educational achievement, even going back in time, women who were unmarried and did not have children, they did a study of this, who were professors, compared to men who had the same profile, the women who were unmarried and did not have children made tenure earlier than the men did, and they made more money than the men did, too. So there are many statistics that show that there is not a wage gap and that women are doing even better than the media would have you believe.
You know, Marianne, I came across a number this morning, too, that said that single, urban, childless women actually make a little bit more than men make.
So, again, I think it's really important to look at the research by age cohort and by profession, because it is actually been documented that women at between the ages of about 20 and 30 earn about the same as a man. However, there are several studies that show that at the point when a woman is married, regardless of if she chooses to have children or not, her wages relative to a married man begin to decline.
Even without kids,
even without
her away
children
from the office.
And I think it's important to understand that in many cases, all of these laws, like the Equal Pay Act in 1964, are there to prevent discrimination and gender stereotyping. And I know in New Hampshire, when we looked at the wage gap by profession, we definitely were able to document that the wage gap exists between the ages of 30 and 65, male and female, depending on the profession. And in New Hampshire, in the higher education, there was definitely a wage gap that we experienced in the research and data that was documented.
Well, lots more to talk about. Mark, thank you for that call. We'll take more of your calls after a very short break. So stay with us. The number 1-800-892-6477. If you're on the line, stay there because we'll be right back.
It's NHPR's fundraiser, NHPR, New Hampshire, public radio. Radio made right here in the Granite State for Granite Staters. Of course, we do carry programs we don't make, like All Things Considered Morning Edition Here and Now, Radio Lab. But being New Hampshire public radio means serving Granite Staters, which means making radio right here in the state. The Exchange is a great example of that, what public radio New Hampshire style sounds like.
And what do you think the implication is? I mean, this is sort of the big question overhanging this whole thing. What's the implication of not having a civically educated society?
I think it's hard.
How does that play out?
I think it's hard to run a democracy unless you've got effectively run a democracy, participate in a democracy, which requires participation by definition, if you don't understand what in the world it is you're participating in. And
NHPR is a community of radio makers and radio listeners. You tune in to be entertained, informed, and inspired, and your membership makes New Hampshire Public Radio possible. Here's how you can help.
It's easy. You can call 1-888-805-6477, or you can make your gift online at nhpr.org. Good morning. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with our Morning Edition host, Rick Ganley. Taking just a couple of moments, we'll be back to the Exchange in just a couple of moments to ask you to make a gift during our very short two-day fund drive by calling 1-888-805-6477.
That call is especially important this morning, Abby, because we are working on this new member challenge. When we hear from 200 new members total by 7 o'clock tonight, we'll receive an additional $5,000 from a group of donors, including Bill Chapman and Alex Ray, and several anonymous donors have gotten together to contribute to that as well. And good news, we're down to 84. Just 84 new members will get us to that goal. We need 84 new members between now and 7 o'clock tonight. We can certainly do that with your phone call right now, 1-888-805-6477. That's 1-888-805-6477. You can also become a member at nhpr.org.
Such an interesting conversation this morning on the Exchange. We're talking with Marion Jones, Executive Director of the Women's Fund of New Hampshire, about the gender wage gap. This is a national issue that we are able to look at from the New Hampshire perspective, and it's one of the things that the Exchange team really prides itself on, being able to find the right people who understand the issue from the national perspective but are able to talk about how the issues play out right here at home and engage you in conversation around those issues. This is an incredibly important platform for discussion of the issues. So you can support it right now by calling 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And the reason that it is such an important platform here in the Granite State is we take the time to really do it right. The problem with much of media these days, of course, is it's so immediate. Everything is thrown on the air so quickly. That's not what we do in public radio. We take the time. And of course, time is money. It's the most expensive element in producing a show like The Exchange 5 days a week. We make sure the interviews are interesting and informative. The producers and researchers spend hours lining up the right guests and researching the issues involved. And of course, Laura spends so much of her time reviewing notes, reading books, digesting all the information that she can so that she can put together an articulate program for you every single day. Time is money. Your money helps ensure that we have the time to put together a show like The Exchange. That's why you listen. That's why you support New Hampshire Public Radio. And let's hear from you right now. 1-888-805-6477. 1-888-805-6477. New members, let's hear from you.
Or everybody. I mean, here's the thing. This is not just for new members. Our new member challenge is important, but you can call in with a renewing donation. You can call in with an additional gift. Maybe you let your membership lapse a few years ago. Well, this is a great time to jump back in because everyone who donates during this short two-day drive is entered to win a brand new third-generation iPad donated by Small Dog Electronics in the Mall of New Hampshire. The deadline to enter is 7 o'clock tonight, so new members, it'd be great to help make the challenge, but if you're renewing or making an additional gift, you can do that too. 1-888-805-6477.
Become a member for the radio. Stay for the benefits. Everyone who donates during this short two-day drive does get entered in for that iPad, but when you make a $100 pledge to NHPR, we'll send you the NHPR member card. Ask about it when you give a call right now, 1-888-805-6477, or become a member at nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from UR members and from Grapponi Auto Group, featuring multiple lines of fuel-efficient, environmentally friendly cars at Grapponi Auto Junction in Bow and online 24 hours a day at grapponi.com. And the Community College System of New Hampshire at its 7 colleges statewide. Congratulations to the class of 2012 who made the community colleges part of their educational path. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're exploring the wage gap in terms of what men make versus what women make. We're exploring how big this gap might be, whether it exists at all, and what might cause it. Our number for you to join us with your questions or comments is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send a short email to exchange@nhpr.org. Also, The Exchange is now on Facebook, so we hope you'll go to our page. Join the conversation there. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Our guests are Marianne Jones, Executive Director of the Women's Fund of New Hampshire, and Gail Trotter, General Counsel for the Independent Women's Forum, a research and educational institution based in D.C. And both of you, let's go back to our callers. Karen's waiting in Sugar Hill. Hi, Karen. Thanks for hanging on. You're on the air.
Yes. Hello. I am a practicing pharmacist of 36 years. And twice in my career, I have discovered that men were paid more than I was. And I was practicing once in New York and once in New Hampshire, once when I was a pharmacy intern, and the second time when I was the director of a hospital pharmacy.
So how much? Was it a little or a lot, Karen?
It was a significant amount. I was pretty outraged.
Wow. So what did you do?
I went to my director and I said, I've discovered this, and it's pretty important to me to explain why this happened. And there was a very perfunctory answer, and they said, what can we do to make it right? And I told them back pay and that I had access to the information as a director. I wasn't a director at that time. I became the director the year after that.
What was the answer that you were given, that perfunctory answer, Karen?
Well, you know, that's what the person had asked to come on, and they felt that they could do it.
And did you get your compensation that you felt you deserved?
Yes. I did. But I found it very indignant because I had practiced 17 years there, and this person who had just come on was a retail pharmacist who had no hospital experience.
Yeah. And last question, how did you find out this information, Karen? Because one of the issues that comes up is in the private sector, anyway, this information is not supposed to be shared.
Right. They had happened to leave out a budget, and it was very open. They had forgotten and left it out, and I discovered it. The second time, the first time, a very wonderful classmate of mine said, Karen, I got to tell you something. And they knew how hard I was working to get through school. I was working 3 jobs to get through school. And they said, Karen, I got to tell you something. They're paying me more than you. It was a wonderful young gentleman that was my colleague in the same school as I was. And that's how I found out that time.
All right, Karen, thanks a lot for sharing your story. Gail Trotter, what do you think?
Karen, that is a really frustrating experience, and that hearing that is just makes your stomach turn. And it also shows that the laws that we have in place right now are working, because you were able to go to your employer and with their knowledge of the laws that were passed in the 60s, know that they were doing something that wasn't right, and they made changes to it. The law that they're trying to pass now would change it so much so that it wouldn't just be lost wages that you would receive. It would also be compensatory damages and punitive damages. And when employers in this market are trying to decide who to hire, they might be less likely to hire women because of the threat of frivolous lawsuits. And we all know that unemployment right now is at 8.2%, and we want people to be able to get jobs, get out there, get working, get experience, be able to support their families. And this law is just not going in the right direction.
You know, I want to pick up with you, Marianne, on something Karen said. When she confronted her boss, he said, well, that's what the other guy asked for. Numerous studies have looked at this wage gap, and sometimes they find that it's that women aren't as aggressive about asking for the big numbers in those salary negotiations.
Well, I think it's interesting where the previous caller talking about the young women coming out of colleges now. I think that's going to disappear. But there is research that has shown over the last 25 years that as women get out of, for instance, MBA degree, a man and a woman with the same degree will go in and be offered a first salary, and the man will negotiate that up 10-15%, and the woman will accept the salary that's offered. So a number of professional development programs that the Women's Fund supports and others do help promote teaching women about negotiating skills. It's just one of those areas. However, in the wage gap, that still does not account for the kinds of wage gaps we're seeing develop over a lifetime of work.
It's too bad we don't have a pie chart, Marianne. You know, X percent is due to this, X percent is due to that. Something that you said in one of your recent studies, some of the wage gap, I'm quoting here, some of the wage gap persists due to traditional barriers to women's economic advancement or discrimination. What are you talking about there, Marianne? Traditional barriers to women's economic advancement. That sounds very 1970s.
Yeah, right. Well, I think as we look at equality for women in the state of New Hampshire, it's combating gender stereotypes that women aren't presidents, women aren't vice presidents, women aren't managers, so that when someone comes up for advancement or promotion in a job, that the two candidates, if one's a woman and one's a man, somebody might just without even realizing it, discriminate against the woman because they think she's going to leave to have children or is going to drop out of the workforce when statistically, because of the mobility of jobs these days, most people don't stay in their job any more than 24 months as it is. So, in fact, there's kind of assumptions that are brought to the table. And I think Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the Supreme Court Justice, she commented on that a lot of the reasons why we're promoting new laws and new acts to combat these stereotypes is that people come with assumptions to the table and to their work, and they don't realize, they may not understand that they are discriminating.
That women won't be quite as dedicated or quite as serious.
Right. They bring kind of corporate and societal culture. This is all relatively new, that women are on the same level playing field as men. We've had the vote for 90 years. That's not that long. And we've also only had the Equal Pay Act for 50 years. So without additional tools to advance women with equal pay, it's going to be another 50 years before we close this wage gap.
Well, and I want to ask you about the additional tools. But Gail, what do you think? Now, as I said, not only are you with the Independent Women's Forum, but you're co-founder of Schaefer & Trotter, a law firm that works with entrepreneurs and small businesses. What about the small business owners that you work with? Do they hold certain stereotypes about how dedicated women will be to the job?
No, of course not, because a lot of the business owners that I represent are women, and women find that entrepreneurial endeavors are really good for them for being able to mix family and professional development. And I think that's something that women have to consider, too, is, you know, you don't have to just take the kind of job that everyone else takes. There are opportunities to expand yourself, be creative, get out there, market yourself, and you don't have to just assume that what people tell you is what you should do is what you should do. And that goes back to the equal pay issue. Karen talked about how she was able to get the employer to compensate her fairly. And there are situations where women are making choices and they want to not be in the corporate setting. They want to be out there as entrepreneurs. And that's what my experience has been. And the problem is for those women who are entrepreneurs, this Paycheck Fairness Act hurts them as well because it subjects them to lawsuits, and it also prevents them from hiring more people.
What do you think about that, Marianne, the lawsuit issue? Again, I don't want to focus the whole hour on this Paycheck Fairness Act, which just went down in the U.S. Senate, but the fear that, look, you're opening up companies to all sorts of gender-based pay discrimination lawsuits if you make it easier for those lawsuits to be filed.
Well, I think it's an issue of having access to understanding what the wage scales are and how people are being compensated. As Karen said, she just happened upon a budget report. In some cases now, if you happened upon a budget report that you were not privy to see, you could be dismissed from that corporation just for viewing that kind of information. I think women are a bellwether for how society society is doing. And as far as small businesses, New Hampshire actually has the lowest rate of small business ownership by women in the country. And that's considered to be an economic driver of a positive economic environment. So I think there are a lot of barriers for women, even if they choose not to go into a traditional corporate position, for opening businesses. And what those barriers are, I think it's important for us to understand and do more research to find out what those barriers are. I don't think the barriers are going to end up being frivolous lawsuits. I think these are real issues. A woman can lose up to $500,000 in a lifetime of earnings as a result of this pay gap. That's real money, particularly in retirement accounts and having security in, as you in the aging years. So these are real numbers, and these are real dollars that entire population group is missing out on as a result of discriminatory practices. Giving more tools so that that can be rectified easily without the fear of reprisal or dismissal becomes very important.
Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Join us as we look at this issue of the gender wage gap. We're looking at how big it might be, whether it exists at all, what might cause it. If it does exist, join us. Do you see this wage gap in your own workplace? If so, why do you think that's the case? Is it about discrimination and barriers, as Marianne Jones says, or is it different career paths and choices that men and women take? Also, if you don't think this male-female wage gap exists, why do you think there is still so much discussion about this issue? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Gail and Marianne, back to the phones. And Mike's calling from Portsmouth. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you. I had two comments. First off, one was just that it's not only a discrimination against women, per se, it's a discrimination against workers. If a woman is paid less, it's also going to her family, potentially. I know that if my wife were paid less than a male colleague, it's not just impacting her, it's impacting my whole family. So in a lot of ways, this is more about the worker versus the higher-up.
Was your wife paid less than a male colleague, Mike?
I'm not certain. I am certain because she's a public employee. Her salary is published once a year, and so she's been equitably compensated. And the other comment that I had is I think it's important that men, just as workers, mention to their employees, as I have in the past, or employers rather, that if somebody were to negotiate your salary, I often mention, and I hope my female colleagues are getting the same as me, because in the past I've found out that a few were being underpaid, and I made an issue that I want somebody who's working just as hard as me to get the same as I do. It's about worker equitability.
So you did see this in your workplace, Mike?
Yes, I had previously.
And how did you find out about that?
It was actually more a call of the bluff. It came time for a raise, and I said, and I know my female colleague isn't getting as much. And there was a blank stare, and they said, how do you know that? And it was basically one of those moments where she just told me.
Wow. Okay. Well, Mike, thanks a lot for calling in. Gail, what do you think about Mike's story?
I would love to have Mike as a coworker. That's amazing. That's exactly the kind of culture that we want to create. And laws cannot solve all problems. Even being a lawyer and understanding the law and working with the law every day, laws cannot solve all problems. It's the culture. And people like Mike stepping up and saying, for the good of our company, I want to be paid the same amount as my female colleague, understanding that that probably means he's going to get paid less as a result. If he has more qualifications or other things that entitle him to more pay, but the team effort that he cares about that so much and the success of the company, that's wonderful. You know, employers don't have money trees. So whatever they pay to one employee, they have to take it out of what they're paying to another employee. And Mike recognizing that and stepping up to the plate and saying, I want this kind of treatment for my female colleague because I want to be a team, that's just wonderful, and that's what we should be promoting.
Do you hear, Marianne, stories about employers saying to themselves, okay, you know, Susie and Mike are doing the same work, they're both really good at it, but let's pay Mike more because he's a man? I mean, does that really still happen in 2012?
I think there are a lot of Mike. Again, I wish we had a lot of Mikes, and I just want to also say that from what Mike's point is that this is not just a women's issue, and I do agree with that. Today, more and more women are working two-parent households. Everybody's working. It's a human rights issue. That's what we're talking about here. And yes, I would say that when we talk to HR people, human resource people, there are some people who didn't realize that when they have two people looking for a promotion, they promote the man over the woman because they think the man is going to be in that position longer, isn't going to drop out to take care of family, and the woman may. And they don't realize that they bring that bias to the table. And I think it plays out when you look at the statistics of how many women are in senior executive positions here in New Hampshire, or how many women are CEOs. It's a very small percentage, and it's a percentage that's lower than the national average.
Okay, and I've got a follow-up for you after a short break, though, Marianne. It'll have to wait. Thanks for that call, Mike. We'll take more of your calls after a very short break, so stay right here.
My name is Lynn Krikorian. I'm from Manchester, and I am a sustaining member of NHPR. I feel that Laura Kanoi is a terrific host because she's very balanced. Promote an idea rather than an agenda, I think, is really what I think Laura does so well with allowing her guests to speak on their points of view. There is never a time that I feel like she's swaying one way or another. I feel like she's really trying to bring ideas to the table so that people can form their own opinions. It's wonderful.
That's what a great host does indeed. And there's a lot of respect both on both sides of the microphone for Laura Kanoi, of course. Good morning. I'm Rick Ganley alongside Abby Goldstein, welcoming you to NHPR's very, very short two-day fund drive. In fact, we're within day two here, just a few hours to go. And we're asking for your membership right now at 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And we have a very special challenge going on right now. It is our new member challenge. When we hear from 200 new members by 7 o'clock this evening, we'll receive an additional $5,000 from a group of veteran donors, from Casey Trumbull and Alex Ray and some anonymous folks who have kicked in as well. And here is the fabulous news, Rick. Just 80 new members to go to make this goal. And we are, what, about 10 hours away now from the deadline.
So totally doable.
It's totally doable, but that means all of you need to make your phone calls right now. 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Think for a moment why you listen to The Exchange. Well, you listen to it for relevant topics like the one we're this conversation we're listening to today about the gender wage gap. Of course, that the paycheck Fairness Act that was just voted down in the Senate. That's what happened this week. That kind of was the impetus to have the show today. The Exchange team thought this is something that we need to be talking about, the gender wage gap and what's been happening with that in America. Now, you may be something you didn't think about recently, but it's here in the news. It's something that we thought was really important. The Exchange team got it on, and they're hearing from you right now. They're giving you a platform to give your opinions. It's relevant topics like this, talking about the wider implications. Give us a call right now, 1-888-805-6477. Come and support that programming. Become a member of NHPR, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
And, you know, just to give you some context for what your donation does to help support this program, here's a little behind-the-scenes look at The Exchange. This topic was not originally scheduled today, but as news unfolded this week about the Paycheck Fairness Act, The Exchange team leapt into action so we could be timely and relevant. It's easy to think that Laura Kanoi just walks into the studio and starts talking, but it couldn't be farther from the truth. Your donation creates the space that allows us to do this work. It supports all the behind-the-scenes work, the amazing production team, the research, the subscriptions, everything it takes to be timely and relevant. Just a little glimpse behind the scenes of what your membership donation does. Make that call right now, 1-888-805-6477 or nhpr.org.
Another incentive for you to give us a call right now. Everyone who donates during this short two-day drive is entered to win a brand-new 30 third generation iPad. This is a machine that has over 200,000 applications available to run on it. This does everything. It's donated by Small Dog Electronics in the Mall of New Hampshire. Don't delay, because the deadline to enter is today, 7 o'clock. That'll be your last chance. So if you want to get into the drawing, we need to hear from you right now. Become a member of NHPR. Get your name in the hat for that third generation iPad. If you don't want it, I guarantee it's going to make a fantastic gift for someone that you know. 1-888-805-6477. That's the number to call. Put your name in the hat. Become a member of NHPR. 1-888-805-6477, or go to nhpr.org. And thanks.
Support for NHPR comes from You Are Members and from People's United Bank, offering home equity loans to help manage individual financial needs. People's United Bank, what know-how can do. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. And from Champlain College's Master's in Mediation and Applied Conflict Studies program, online information session on Friday, June 15th at masters.champlain.edu. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at what's often called the gender wage gap between what men make and women make. Our phone number here in The Exchange for you to join us with your questions, comments, stories, 1-800-892-6477. And Gail Trotter, Marianne Jones, let's go right back to our callers. Dana is waiting in Hillsboro. Hi, Dana. You're on the air.
Hi, all. My comment is this. I'm wondering if, in calculating the wage gap, did they take into account the value of benefits? Because I know that as a mom and a wife, when I'm looking at a job option, there's something to be said for the value of extra sick days or sick days I can take for my family when they are ill. And I might be willing to take, quote-unquote, less per hour if I'm aware, if I'm sure that I'm going to have the flexibility I need to be both a worker and a mom.
You know, Dana, this is exactly the point, Gail Trotter, that you mentioned at the beginning. So why don't you reiterate that?
That's right, Dana. And I find that's the case, too. I have six children, and I really need the flexibility to be able to take them to the doctor or respond if there's a crisis and too many ER trips, things like that, as I'm sure any mother can relate to. And those things we can understand have value if it's not a monetary value. And some of the statistics try to take that into account when looking at the full package of the salary. But a lot of those things you can't monetize, because the flexible arrangement, being able to telecommute from home, not having to travel at the last minute, not having to travel at all these things are choices that women want to have when it comes to arranging their work lives. And we need to give that value and give the women value for making those choices that best suit their situation.
And Marianne, again, this is a point Gail said right at the outset. Money isn't everything for women when it comes to professional satisfaction.
I think, again, I go back to the apples for apples. If we take a flexible workplace job, which has great benefits that a woman is choosing, and we look across the profession at male versus female workers in exactly the same position, we still see a trend of discrimination in the wage gap arena. So we're not talking about comparing, a 70-hour work week to a 40-hour work week. We're talking about comparing exactly the same profession and just changing the gender. So, and again, it varies by age cohort. Women between the ages of 20 and 30 are on parity with men, and I think it's hopefully that will be maintained. However, again, when you look at the cohort between 30 and 40, you see a really odd decline that you can't explain in women's wages. And that's what we're talking about with the wage gap. Why, over a lifetime, are women's wages declining, even if they are staying full-time in the workforce?
And is that going to change, as one of our earlier callers suggested, as women gain higher degrees and as they gain the guts to ask for that higher amount of money?
Well, and I also think that one of the reasons that we've seen this shift and uncovered the wage gap is as women advanced into directorships, and that's something that we've heard from the callers, that when they advance into management positions, they start to look at the salaries. And it's an aha moment for many women who advance into those management positions. They look down over the line workers and realize, hey, there's some discrimination, or there's some discrepancies here. Is it a result of discrimination? And then they work to rectify that.
What do you think, Gail? You know, beyond sort of the choices women make, part-time benefits and all that, Marianne is saying when you compare apples to apples, you know, 50 hours to 50 hours, same, same. The only thing that's different is one's a man, one's a woman, that you still do see this gap. What do you think, Gail?
I don't think that's accurate. And the example I had of the study of the college professor shows that it's not true. And if you take individual professions with experience and certain circumstances and you look at those things, it doesn't hold up. And more importantly, the point that she wonderfully made is that discrepancy does not equal discrimination. And when we do have discrimination, which of course is going to happen in a nation of 300 million people, there are laws already on the books to handle this. And in our difficult economy right now, we do not need to be putting a tax on employers, essentially a tax against hiring new employees. It's not good for women and it's not good for our economy.
What do you mean, a tax on employees? I'm not sure what you mean.
A tax in the sense that having to come up with legal funds to pay for possible frivolous lawsuits or not having the resources to hire people because they're afraid of these lawsuits, that's like a tax. It's not an actual tax, but it's like a tax because it's something the government's doing that puts employers at a disadvantage.
I see. And talking about the Paycheck Fairness Act.
Which, yes, that's
okay,
right.
Okay, great. Well, and Dana, thanks for that call. Here's an email from Robin in Hanover who says, your basic terminology is prejudicial to the compensation discussion. To call a pay differential a gap implicitly suggests it should be filled. Wage gap, missile gap, academic performance gap, all these terms clearly suggest someone needs to catch up with someone else. Robin says your discussion rightly covers various viewpoints on the differentials issue, but even your guests who say that pay differences are often rational or justifiable are implicitly surrendering a good portion of their point when they accept the term wage gap as the shorthand definition of what is the subject at hand. Robin, thanks for those thoughts, and Gail Trotter to you.
I completely agree with that, and that's why anytime I write about the wage gap, I put it in quotation marks. And since this is on the radio, you can't see the quotation marks.
Marianne?
Well, again, I would say that in New Hampshire, we do see a wage gap. And I think in the period of time of 50 years where we've had the equal pay legislation, we're finally seeing women make advances in the workplace. But if we don't do more to ensure the equality, it's going to take another 50 years. And frankly, I'm not going to know those young women who are going to be paid equally. So I think that here in New Hampshire, as we look at these different professions, we are uncovering a very clear wage gap. For single women heads of household, that translates to less money for food in the house, less money for health care for their children. And we know that when women are thriving, that they give back to their community and their children. It's a very important formula to make communities thrive. So we're looking at the wage gap, and we do in New Hampshire see that it needs to be mitigated.
Well, thanks for that email, Robin. And let's take one more call if we could. Sarah is up from Exeter. Hi, Sarah. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to sort of comment about Gail's idea that this law would sort of prevent employers from making hirings. And really, it seems to me that it would simply encourage employers from the outset to be fair and be equitable, because there will be no need for someone to sue an employer if they're getting a fair cut.
Yeah, I guess the question is, Sarah, what's fair? You know, so fairness is sometimes in the eye of the beholder. You know what I'm saying?
I think equity is in the eye of the beholder, but fairness is not.
Uh-huh. You know, thanks for calling in. And this gets us back once again, Gail, to the Paycheck Fairness Act. And Sarah's saying, look, this isn't going to encourage lawsuits. It's going to encourage employers to be fair, as she said.
That's not true, because it shifts the balance of power in the lawsuit towards the employee away from the employer. And when you have that kind of shift in balance of power, then the employer is less likely to take risks. And anybody in America understands what a litigious society we are, and plenty of people sue without having any basis whatsoever. And when employers are put in this position in a down economy, when they are having to let people go, they don't want to let go, they've had employees for 30 years, they don't want to let go of these employees, but they have to because of economic circumstances and realities, they are not going to be in a position to hire new employees, especially if we continue to make it difficult for them to do so. So it's not going to help employees to be less discriminatory. It's only going to create less opportunity for people to get jobs. And more importantly, employers are going to be less willing to let women have flexible work arrangements, because if they are going to have to pay everyone the same, they want to have the equal work. And maybe you can't have the equal work if you're working from home or working fewer hours. And employers are going to be able to offer women fewer choices to make the kind of decisions they want for their family. And I would say Marianne had a really good point that women contribute to their communities and in ways that money doesn't buy. They volunteer. They're involved in schools. They say room parent now, but we all know it's still room mothers. And if women are forced to work the kind of hours that men are, even when they don't want to, then they're not going to be able to contribute in the communities in the ways that they're doing now.
What do you think about that, Marianne? Not only the Paycheck Protection Act, and we've heard, you know, people say they're afraid that this would cause lawsuits, and we've talked about that, but the idea that this bill might limit the flexibility that many women value.
I think it's important to understand workplace as a family flexible workplace. I think men and women both need to have the flexibility in their workplace that's equitable. So as many times as a woman needs to take her child to a doctor's appointment, I think there's the dad sitting in the office also feeling very much that they want to participate in their child's life and be a room parent and to take that child to the doctor's appointment. So one of the things about having more women in the workforce is it's become more flexible for everybody. This is a family men issue. Family women and men issue. It's not limited to just women who want this flexibility. Men want this flexibility to have more time with family as well as to participate more fully.
Well, both of you, I'm sorry to say this, we have to close it out. This has been really interesting. I don't think we solved this issue, but it's been a good discussion. Gail Trotter, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
And Marianne Jones, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you so much.
This is The Exchange on NHPR. Let's check in now very quickly with our short membership drive.
Thank you, Laura. Really interesting conversation today on The Exchange. I'm Abby Goldstein. I'm here with Rick Ganley. This is a super short two-day fun drive. And in fact, we're on our second day, so we'll be wrapping this up at 7 o'clock this evening. We're about $30,000 away from balancing our budget for this fiscal year. And we have officially heard from 50 first-time donors just this morning.